is good news for all our front page drama listeners and the millions of American Weekly readers. H. Ashton Wolfe is back. You all remember his exciting true life mystery stories taken from the official records of the Sûreté, the French secret police, where H. Ashton Wolfe served for many years. He has personally solved some of the most complex mysteries in the history of international crime. Once again, he will give American Weekly readers and front page drama listeners another exciting series of mystery stories. The first, The Case of the Clawing Death, will be featured in next Sunday's American Weekly. Don't miss it. Order the Hearst Sunday newspaper that brings you at no extra cost the magazine that is read by more people than any other publication in the world, the American Weekly. Front page dramas present The Case of the Clawing Death.
Come, Ashton, you're as slow as a tortoise.
All right, Voltaire.
Hurry up.
Here I am. Now, what is the reason for all the excitement at this unearthly hour?
Just step right in the studio and you'll find out.
Huh?
I'll open the door for you. Here. There, what do you think of that?
Oh, my goodness. It's indescribably ghastly. Where did all this blood come from?
Come, step inside a little more. Now, there's the dead man, lying in that painfully twisted position on the divan bed there. Step over there and examine him.
Ah, horrible. Throat cut, huh?
They ripped rather than cut. The poor fellow bled to death. But although his end was a matter of minutes, why didn't he put up some kind of a fight? He pulled out his revolver but dropped it without firing a shot, you see. There it is on the floor.
Yes.
He's got a Corsican knife in one hand. But those smears of blood on the blade are his own blood. Oh, but wait, this is indeed ghastly. That poor devil was blinded. No wonder he couldn't fight for his life. Both eyes have been put out.
The doctor should be here any minute now. I'll leave it to him to determine how this unspeakably horrible crime was committed. You can see, look, the wrists do not seem to have been bound or held in any way.
Looks like a woman's vengeance to me, but she must have had help to hold him.
Those parallel cuts on his hands and pajamas were caused by his struggles, don't you think?
Yes, I do.
Look around. See if you can find any marks that might indicate the sex of his assailants while I examine the window over here. Maybe I can find out how the murderer got in.
Ah, here's something that will give us a clue. Monsieur Voltaire, hand me one of your research envelopes to put these in.
What is it, Wolf?
Tuft of gray hairs he had clutched in the fingers of his left hand. I've loosened them. Hold the envelope open while I drop them in. There.
Gray hairs. The murderer was an elderly person, huh?
Come over to the window.
Huh?
Look up above, on the outside.
You see that hook up there? Odd, eh? There's been lots of rain, yet the hook is not rusty, which proves it's only been there a short time.
What's the idea? You surely don't think that 6-inch hood had anything to do with the crime? It probably served to hang a light reflector on when the artist was working here in the studio.
Then it should be rusty. Now, look at these. I have taken them off that hook.
Some strands of hemp from a good heavy rope.
Mais oui, but notice, some are bent one way and some another.
Yes?
The strands were torn from the rope as it passed over the hook up and down. The way they are bent not only shows a considerable weight was hoisted up, but that the same weight was let down the same way.
Yes.
And what does that prove?
Nothing yet. But suppose it was a boy whose job was to climb up the rope and let the killer in.
All right, but why didn't he leave by the door afterwards, as the killer presumably did?
Oh, there's the doctor.
Come
right in, doctor. Come in. Be prepared for some nasty business.
Good. When you hear the Pulguin blinded and murdered, monsieur. Who did this foul thing? Pierre was my friend, an artist, a gentle soul.
Would not hurt
us. First of all, doctor, tell us how he was blinded.
They used a sharp curved blade, some type of lancet used by surgeons are made like that. These cuts on the eyelids and face puzzle me, however. Indeed, the whole ghastly affair strikes me as inexplicable. Pierre was rapidly bleeding to death, so why blind him?
You, You mean he was not blinded, sir?
No.
How can you be sure?
The appearance of the eyes proves that the blood was pumping fast from his severed arteries and veins when he was blinded. Observe, too, how those puzzling cuts on his face have bled. As I see it, he was attacked in his sleep. Terrified by the sudden, inexplicable pain, he fumbled for his pistol, but confused by the flow of blood, it slipped from his grasp. Whereupon, he snatched his knife. But then his mental reactions were becoming slow. He struggled only weakly. Overwhelmed, despairing, he made one last vain effort, realizing too late his impending doom. Have you found no clues?
This bottle I found on the floor, under the bed. The cork was out, and it's half full of a liquid that reeks of some drug.
Valerian.
Valerian, huh?
Yeah, that's what I've been smelling so much all around here. Pierre was highly strung. He may have used it as a soothing mixture.
But chemists usually take away the pronounced odor from it before using it for that purpose.
You know, all this somehow is uncanny. It's a nightmare. To me, it's a jealous woman's vengeance. I'm following the old theory. Cherchez la femme. I'll see you all later, gentlemen.
Au revoir.
Oh, you've turned up at last, Monsieur Aston Wolf. Where did you find a woman?
I found three, monsieur. All seriously implicated in the crime. Also a one-armed man who, in place of his missing hand, has a hook. A very sharp hook.
A sharp hook? Oh, that sounds interesting. But begin at the beginning. Give us the facts, Lord.
I will, and please listen attentively, because there is little time left. First, after you left the studio, I went back and found the gendarme guarding the gate. Had admitted a woman. She was Maria Dolores. She had been Pierre's fiancée and model. Her picture hangs in the studio. She is a Corsican. I found her on her knees, holding up a knife and a small crucifix, swearing a vendetta, which is, of course, as you know, vengeance on the dead man's murderer. She told me she loved Pierre much better than the golden-haired doll, Esme, who I understand was to marry the murdered man.
Esme? Was Esme Van Buch, the heiress?
Exactly. After Maria left, I chatted with the doctor for a moment and then quickly departed in pursuit of Maria Dolores. But I took with me this painting. Look at it.
Mm-hmm. Portrait of a pirate. With one arm and a hook attached to the other.
Mademoiselle Maria Dolores took a cab. I followed in another. The thought ran through my mind that maybe Dolores was only acting when she swore that vendetta to throw me off the track.
And you suspect that she, together with the one-armed man who posed for the pirate portrait, may have committed a crime together?
Precisely. Well, I followed Maria Dolores to an isolated villa in the middle of a walled orchard. There she met a horrible, evil-looking old witch and accused the old crony of spying on her. They argued and then went in the house. I managed to get close enough to hear them screaming at each other. The old woman denied having any hand in what I presume was the murder. She said another woman, whom I suspect was Esme, had made up to him.
Who did you identify as the him?
Why, the one-armed man with the hook, of course.
Exactly. Then I heard Maria Dolores say, "You lie. You must have known why she asked you about them. It's lucky for you that I want their help now, or I'd kill you like that. You tell me what I want to know."
You had no idea what the two women were arguing about when they referred to something or someone as them and their help.
No, that puzzled me. For the evil old woman started screaming, "They are not here. What do you mean by threatening me? Get out of here." But Maria Dolores began to beat the old hag and yelled, "I'm going to kill you if you don't tell me where I can find them." The old hag seized a gun and began shooting. For Maria Dolores came tearing out of the house, followed by a fusillade of bullets. And that, of course, prevented me from following her. But soon the old hag came out and I followed her to the offices of the Post and Telegraph, where she sent a telegram. She wrote so heavily, which was fortunate, with an indelible pencil that when she had gone, I took the sheet directly under the one she had written on, and with the aid of a little colloidal copper oxide, I was able to read what she had written.
The telegram was addressed to Mademoiselle Esme Van Buch, I presume.
Correct. It read, "Maria had declared war. Look out. Signed, Gina." Now, gentlemen, it has grown dark. We're off to the house of the old hag, Gina, and plenty of excitement. Come along.
We've got the old hag and that sailor with the one arm and that treacherous hook. We found them going through the house looking for some cats. That place is a veritable menagerie. It's full of wild animals and carrion birds.
Cats! One moment.
What?
Cats. Why didn't I think of that before? Come on, hurry. There isn't a moment to lose. Have both your revolvers drawn, ready to shoot. Come on, to that barn over there.
Hurry.
Heaven forgive me. Pierre is most terribly avenged, but I didn't think it would be like this. Yet Pierre suffered and died just as she did. Perhaps worse since he was attacked in his sleep.
Now tell me, Mademoiselle Maria Dolores, who conceived this vile plot?
She. Esme was insane with jealousy because he sent her away and married me. Ah, yes. He was my husband. We kept it secret, but she found out somehow, and in her fury when she heard of it, it was dreadful.
But the cats, those terrible cats.
They belonged to Gina. Esme went to her constantly to have her fortune told.
Huh?
Then she heard how Sadafora, the man with the hook...
Yes, yes.
...had trained several such Abyssinian cats for a vendetta.
I see.
They are normally quite gentle, harmless pets. But certain smells of plants make them mad. Sadafora kept them in the dark without food and water several days. Then he would fry some liver with certain herbs and tie it about the throat and over the eyes of a straw-stuffed dummy, binding strips of canvas soaked in valerian over the liver. Then he loosed the cats from their chains. They sprang at the dummy and began to rip and claw their way to the food. He also taught them to leave it when he whistled in a certain fashion and come to him for lumps of the fried liver.
I see.
Gina and Sadafora suggested to Esme the fiendish revenge. But the real devil is Sadafora, the man with the hook. He is the cause of it all. He hated Pierre because he was mad about me. And he knew that with the crime at her door, this poor, jealous Esme would be made to pay huge sums of blackmail.
Blackmail, I see. That hook above the window in the studio served to hoist the cats in a basket, level with the open window, whence the valerian trails she, that is, Esme, had spread, led to the divan where Pierre was asleep. I found the half-empty bottle of valerian as well as bits of gray fur. But since the girl Esme could have entered the house, I don't understand why she hoisted them up.
No, no, it was Fedafora, the man with the hook. He didn't dare enter the house. You see, Pierre had recently thrashed him for trying to kick me. And when he kicked him out, he'd warned him he'd shoot him on sight. After Pierre's death, I went to the old woman, Gina, to learn the truth. But it was not easy to make the devil witch talk. And I wanted to know where she kept the cat. I soon learned that. So tonight I sent a wire in her name to Esme.
How are you so sure she would come?
Fedafora and Gina were blackmailing her already. That's why I knew she'd come. But she wouldn't dare to disobey. So I let her go in, with valerian on her dress, for a brush fixed each side of the door. And the cats were freed the moment the door opened. They had not eaten in 4 days.
Ah, mon Dieu. You killed her then?
Yes. But that's all I did. Arrest me. There's no law can touch me.
He was right. The court acquitted Maria Dolores. But Spadafora and Gina were given long terms of imprisonment. On account of Mario Spadafora and the case of Maria Dolores are both reported in official French criminal court records, as well as the newspapers for June 1922.
You have just heard The Case of the Clawing Death by the celebrated author H. Ashton Wolfe, former member of the Sûreté, the French secret police. The complete story of The Case of the Clawing Death will be featured in next Sunday's issue of The American Weekly, the magazine with the greatest circulation in the world, which comes to you with your Hearst Sunday newspaper. Page Dramas present The Mystery of the Stone Bench, the second in the new series of real-life detective stories by H. Ashton Wolfe, former member of the Sûreté, the French secret police, and for many years an assistant to Dr. Bertillon, the founder of the famous system of criminal identification. Everyone appreciates a real good detective story, so don't miss the return of Ashton Wolfe series now appearing in the American Weekly. Join the thousands of American families who each week order the Hearst Sunday newspaper with the magazine that, because of its variety of good reading, has become the nation's reading habit. That magazine is The American Weekly, an important part of your Hearst Sunday newspaper. And now, H. Ashton Wolfe's thrilling detective story, The Mystery of the Stone Bench.
In the leisurely days before the First World War, I had many friends at detective headquarters in Berlin's ancient Hauptstrasse. Foremost among them was Commissar Paul Lang, a strange little man who had risen from the ranks by sheer perseverance and ability. I admired him greatly and was